Right. You know, if after 35 years, you hope that your alderman would move on and be either a part of the community or let someone else take over. But unfortunately, we haven't had that respect.
This is the Patty Vasquez Show on 720 WGN.
On February 26th, Chicagoans are going to the polls, and many people thought last year, well, you know, we're just going to figure out, I guess we're going to vote for Mayor Emanuel unless somebody else comes along. And then he announced in the fall that he would not be seeking re-election. And man, the doors were blown off the hinges because everybody came out and was, and there were some announcements. There were some people like, okay, I could see Preckwinkle jumping in this, and people are mad at Susana Mendoza for running for comptroller and now running for mayor. And one of the names that has risen to the top of the heap and is recognizable to so many in the circles that are paying attention is Amara Enya. I'm going to say, please let me know if I say your name correctly.
Yes, Enya.
Enya.
Yes.
It's a pleasure to have you in studio. It was
Thank
great
you.
to moderate the forum for the 38th Ward Democrats. That was such an interesting evening at the Copernicus Center.
Yes.
So how has your journey been so far? It's been about 2 months since I last saw you.
Yes.
And how's the last month looking ahead of you?
Well, so we are absolutely excited about what's to come. We have gained a lot of momentum, and I think that's a product of a lot of the hard work that's happened with our team. We've expanded our ground game. We've gotten more endorsements. So it's looking like, you know, we've not even reached our peak, and yet we have, I think, the energy and the momentum behind us now.
What are the things that you're hearing from the most when you talk to people on the street, when you were getting signatures, or, you know, whether you're going door to door or, you know, meeting and shaking hands at bus stations? What do people want from the next mayor of Chicago?
Well, one thing is that we collected 62,000 signatures to get on the ballot, which is more than every other candidate. And that is very telling because people were excited and they wanted to sign our petitions. And I think it's because we have an actual message for Chicago that's based on our vision for what the city can become. So we're not just critiquing the way things are, we're showing people what the Chicago that they deserve can look like. And they are excited because it sounds different, it feels relevant to them. And our perspective is a people-driven campaign that actually reflects the lived experience of everyday Chicagoans. So we don't sound like typical politicians. And across the city, people do not want the establishment. Like, they are wholeheartedly rejecting anything that is connected to the establishment and to the machine. And so we're very well positioned with them.
Well, one of the problems that we've had throughout the city and throughout the state, of course, is kicking the can down the field, right, when it comes to pensions and our obligations to those who have taken on jobs that many of us won't or can't do. When we're talking about our teachers, our firefighters, and our police officers, what are your plans for that burden that we all have is our obligation to our pensions?
Yeah, so there's two parts of the strategy. So one is short-term revenue, securing short-term revenue. We have a plethora of options for that, but also the long-term economic growth strategy where we are focused on structurally transforming the economy. That means moving away from this, putting all of our public dollars into private financial institutions and actually having a city-owned public bank for the city, which actually would allow us to do things like fund our own infrastructure without the high interest rates that we pay to private banks right now, 40% to 50% in cost overruns just on interest alone that goes as profit to private banks. That kind of money would be recirculated back into our economy as revenue. It also allows us to expand small business loans so that we can have more entrepreneurs and more small businesses across the city, because we are willing to take higher risk by investing in entrepreneurs with small business loans that the bank could issue. So we have to address the long-term revenue that the city needs while also making sure that we're growing the economy, which makes us much more financially strong so that we can pay our pension obligations, so that we won't be raising fines, fees, and tickets on residents that can least afford to pay.
Have there been any other cities who've had that sort of
same wavelength right there?
Yeah. Like the public
are there success stories? Yes.
Yeah, so the best example right now is actually in North Dakota. It's one of the highest performing banks in the country, and this is currently in process in dozens of cities and states across the country. The governor of New Jersey, this was the hallmark of his economic plan. I actually work on this with public finance professionals across the country, and New York, Los Angeles, San Francisco, Santa Fe, they're all moving down this path, and Chicago really should be leading on this issue.
What are the... Are you guys hearing a little bit of feedback?
Oh, there we go. Now you're better.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was
there
weird.
It is.
Yeah. What are the barriers to establishing a Citibank?
So right now, there are no real barriers. It's just the process of how it's done. So for capitalizing it, or the initial capital or dollars that it takes to start the bank, you actually will just shift it from the money that we currently hold in private banks. So you don't have to have a brand new capital raise to start the bank. And then it's structured in a way that there are firewalls so that it doesn't become the mayor's bank, or, you know, it mitigates corruption. So it's the whole structure of it makes sure that there is accountability at every level, that it's not tied to a political office, mm-hmm. that it's only for public tax dollars, and that the money is actually recirculated back into the economy. So it is a way of moving us away from the hundreds of millions of dollars that we currently pay to private financial institutions whose motive is always profit. A public bank's only motive is making sure that we're expanding the economy.
You know, a lot of folks, you mentioned something very important, which is, you know, someone who's tied to the machine or someone who's accumulated a lot of power. Obviously, we have a lot of problems right now in our city hall, whether it's, you know, the stories about Solis, you know, walking around with a wire. I mean, the appalling thing is that it's all appalling.
Yeah.
And the I guess the other thing is that people kind of are acting as though, yeah, I could see that. Right.
Yeah.
Or the fact that, you know, they're more people are more mad that he was wearing a wire than the fact that they were doing shady stuff.
And, yes.
And I'm editing my language right now. Yes.
I mean, it really is interesting. There was the anger that he snitched on everyone and not the actual corruption that's existing. And then there's this rush of folks to give money back. So you take money from someone who's widely known as being corrupt, and then the rush to give money back, which is disingenuous. I just think that there's a culture of corruption that's been allowed to thrive that's tacitly accepted by most people who've been in office. It's business as usual for them. So now that it has become politically toxic, because you had Alderman Burke was indicted, mm-hmm. and then you had Solis was wearing a wire, now everyone is scrambling to distance themselves. But this is why people are tired of the machine. This is why they're tired of the establishment, because they see the inside deals, they see the political clout that's giving people access to power and money, and they're losing out. People are struggling to stay in their homes, struggling to get into good schools, and the system isn't working for them.
You mentioned getting into good schools. There's a lot of anger when it comes to the magnet schools, which we know we're very proud of. We're very proud of our special enrollment, selective enrollment, yes. schools, including Peyton and Jones, Lane Tech. But there are some, I mean, first of all, it does seem as though they are predominantly white. Mm-hmm. And now you have communities that continue to struggle, continue to have to be strangled when it comes to opportunities to progress.
Yes.
How do we, you know, channel some of that, those resources into communities, and not just whether it's, you know, the ones that we talk about, whether it's Englewood or, you know, Wildwood, you know, from one end of the city to the other. Our kids have to get on buses and trains to go to better schools.
Exactly. And that's one of the centerpieces of my education platform, is we have to reevaluate the selective enrollment model. I think it cements stratification in CPS. When they did it initially, it was to keep middle class families here, because they would say, okay, now I can get into one of these schools. But now parents have to start thinking about a selective enrollment school when their child is born.
Yep.
Because they've got to navigate to go to the right elementary school, the right middle school,
yep.
move into this neighborhood to get into the right high school. And parents are deciding that they don't want to have to think about that. So they'll just move out to the suburbs where they know their kids will get into a quality school. So we're actually losing families because of this model. And also, if we truly care about everyone having access to a quality school, a quality high school, then we have to invest in the neighborhood high schools that we have. We can't just concentrate our investment in the few selective enrollment high schools that only serve a small fraction of CPS's population.
Yep. We are talking to Mara Enya. She's running for mayor of Chicago, one of the most important jobs in the country, the most important job held publicly in my life, I would say. Since I was could remember, I went to a public school, and every fall when I was a kid, we didn't know if we were going to start school on time. And yeah. we want to talk more about education, about the safety of our city. And if you have any questions or comments, feel free to give us a text or a call. And I'm going to warn you right now, Amara, my mom wants to know about the piece in the Sun Times today. So she's like, ask her. You are talking to her. Make sure to ask. More in a moment on 720 WGN. What do people want from the next mayor?
Across the city, people do not want the establishment. Like, they are wholeheartedly rejecting anything that is connected to the establishment and to the machine. And so we're very well positioned with them.
This is the Patty Vasquez Show on 720 WGN.
February 26th. is the day to, well, you don't have to wait until February 26th. There's early polling. There's a location in Chicago, and there'll be more in your neighborhoods throughout the next couple weeks. Right now in studio, in the Allstate Skyline Studios, joining me is Amar Inya, and we also have Paul Farvar has stepped in to join us as well and ask the exact same question. It's so funny because you and I are like, has this worked with the Citibank?
Well, you were
so
staring at me and your point. I was like, oh, did I do something wrong?
No,
I didn't know what I was supposed to say.
I was like, yes, gotcha. You're right. That's the question I want to ask. Jen Zanotti joined us as well. And my mom handed me a newspaper this morning, Amara, and she's like, do I have to ask? But here's the thing about that article and your personal finances and catching up with whether it was student debt or filing quarterly for campaign finances. It's something that people can jump on. It's a headline that people want to grab.
Certainly.
Tell people about what happened.
Yeah, so this is something that I've been pretty transparent from the beginning. So the article that came out talked about personal finances, personal taxes, student loans, and basically the picture was painted about a challenging economic hardships. And so I spoke about this publicly back in the end of December when I first released my tax returns, and we used it as a way to talk about economic justice issues in Chicago and what it means for people to try to afford to live here. So the article essentially paints this picture about the challenges that you might face in your personal finances, but then it parallels that with your competence to manage a city, manage a municipality. And to me, the parallel is that for those who do face economic hardship, which is the majority of Chicagoans, many people know what it's like to not be able to pay rent. Many folks, especially millennials, know what it means to have student loan debt that you're saddled with. Many folks have to file amendments on their taxes, which I had to file amendments on taxes because of an oversight on my part, which once you identify it, you address it and you move forward. And so we were just going to tackle it head on and say we addressed it, we move forward. Like many Chicagoans, they understand these issues. Mm-hmm. And also, we've had individuals who come from wealth who also have stellar personal finances that have brought the city to the brink of financial ruin. And so why are we saying that somehow having your personal finances in order is actually good for the city when our pension obligations, our structural deficit, the lack of revenue, all has existed under individuals who have probably turned in all of their tax returns on time and apparently never had to file corrections. So we're trying to change the narrative. And the article, though it was intended as a hit piece, all we do is take it for what it is. These are issues that Chicagoans across the city identify with. And we're going to stand and speak up on behalf of Chicagoans who share my experiences. And this is why our campaign resonates, because people are seeing that this is authentic. We're not speaking from a theoretical standpoint. This is my lived experience as represented through this campaign.
One of the things that people know about our city when it comes to the national headlines is the violence here. And there's a lot of concern about corruption in the police department. Of course, the verdicts in the last couple weeks in the sentencing, the decision to dismiss the case against the police officers who were...
Yeah, they were all acquitted.
They were all acquitted. Mm-hmm. And then Jason Van Dyke's sentencing. What are your thoughts and what are your plans when it comes to, building trust in the communities and the relationship between, the police department in every single neighborhood?
Well, building trust requires the department to have legitimacy in the neighborhoods. And so a lot of the problem is when you have this refusal to implement even the most basic reforms, what it does is it costs the city financially. So we're going to pay $1.7 billion just in police misconduct cases alone, as largely as a result of not implementing these reforms. But also there's a moral problem because people don't believe that the department is serious about changing because there's so much resistance to reforms. So we have to implement the necessary reforms. I'm glad that the consent decree process has moved forward, that we now have it. In spite of any weaknesses in it, we have to have a mayor who's willing to negotiate in good faith on behalf of the residents of the city with the Fraternal Order of Police, because these are the things that start to show communities that the department is committed to actually moving in the right direction.
What are your thoughts as far as the teachers' unions and the, whether it's having the neighborhoods have a little more control and input rather than the city-appointed teacher boards?
Well, so I've stood on having an elected school board for Chicago. People want responsiveness. They don't feel that they have that with a completely appointed board. We've also had a number of scandals in CPS, everything from the $20 million no-bid scandal that led our last our previous CPS CEO in prison. The last CPS CEO had to resign under shame for trying to lie about legal advising so that he could get some things done. Just a lot of corruption. We had the sex abuse scandal that was revealed by the press that forced CPS to act. So you have all of these things that are happening. You have an appointed school board. You have a lack of responsiveness. So people are saying they want a school board that is responsive and that reflects the communities. And that's why an elected school board is part of our platform.
Yes, Paul, did you have a question?
Yeah. So going back to what you said about the police accountability and the building the trust, a lot of if you talk to officers, they're always saying it's really hard to get community to get cooperation from people. Going back to what we talked about with the you know, people getting mad at the snitches, but mm-hmm. no one's reporting things that are happening because they're afraid to snitch.
Yeah, I mean, it goes both ways. It definitely goes both ways. So people have to know that if they do work, so people in their blocks are the best eyes and ears on their own blocks, not only for themselves, but in terms of being able to coordinate with the police department if they need to do that. And so what CPD has to do is to invest in building strong block club infrastructure where people can monitor on their own blocks, they can be keep track of what's happening on their own blocks, and they can support that infrastructure, which means we don't have to necessarily rely on police presence in our communities as much. Because when you have such extensive police presence, it just, in over-police communities, you have issues of profiling, you have just so many things that erode trust. So it starts by building institutional block clubs, having stronger CAPS programs and not eliminating them, which the department has done. And those are the things that send a signal that we're not just calling for more police in our neighborhoods. We actually think that neighbors on their blocks are the best way to monitor and prevent violence and work with police if they need to.
We have to run, but I know I didn't give you the opportunity the night that we did the mayoral forum. Would you like to give some closing remarks on why you believe the city of Chicago voters should turn out and punch that card for you?
Yes. So the punch number is 30. The punch number is 30. And the reason why that number in this campaign is so important is because this is a unique opportunity that the city has not had to actually have a mayor that reflects our values, not just with the ability to critique what is, but we offer a vision for Chicago that's inclusive with bold ideas that actually will transform Chicago. Everything from our economic platform, our education platform. We need fresh new ideas and the energy to put them in place. That's the kind of leadership that we deserve. We are not tied down by the baggage of the status quo and the baggage of corruption. And people across the city want a fresh start. And our campaign most closely resonates with people. And so if we want better, not just different, but better, this campaign is the campaign for the city of Chicago.
And your website for the Amara Enya campaign?
Yes. Yes. So the website is amaraenya.com. It is AmaraEnya.com. And on all social media, we're Amara for Chicago.
Amara, we thank you so much for joining us tonight. Wish you the best of luck and would love to have you back regardless of what happens on the 26th.
Certainly. Thank you.
Thank you so much. More in a moment on 720 WGN.